You Give Love a Bad Name by Sutlers. Read by Rhea 314. Alan woke up on the morning of his 17th birthday feeling more content than he had since he was 11 years old. It was early still, the sun barely a sliver on the horizon, and Alan tucked his blankets around himself as he watched it rise. He was warm, he was happy, the Earl was dead, and his friends weren't. Life was looking up. The only thing that could possibly have made things better would be to have someone to wake up to, but Alan wasn't complaining. It was hardly worth mentioning in the relative scheme of things. Then he went to breakfast, and everything went to shit.
"Pardon?" Alan asked. "My what?"
"Your Vila ancestry," Kumui repeated patiently, holding a silk handkerchief embroidered with pink rabbits to his nose. "After the incidents of the past few days, I was obliged to open a correspondence with an organization of friends of mine in Scotland. They have informed me that the symptoms you are exhibiting and the timing of their occurrence, that is, directly after your 17th birthday, correspond exactly with the developments of someone with Vila blood goes through upon reaching the age of majority. Tell me, how old were you when your hair lost its color?"
11, but that was trauma."
Komui shook his head. "I'm afraid you're mistaken. In any case, that follows as well."
"What?"
"Alan," Komui said, "there are things in this world that are strange and fantastical. Often they can be difficult to understand. Akuma are not the only things our science is not able to explain adequately. This is not something you should concern yourself with overmuch. You are still the same person you have always believed yourself to be, and the Order will always be your home. Everyone here cares for you very much."
"What is a Vila?" Alan wailed, through the beginnings of a panic attack.
All he wanted was for Kumui to explain the awful things that had been happening to him. But nothing that Kumui was saying made any sense. His fingers dug into the arms of his chair. Kumui blinked.
"Ah, forgive me."
He flipped open the thick black tome on his desk to the place where it had been marked and began reading aloud. "Vila, a magical creature most often found in human form. Vila are known for their ethereal beauty, which they use to captivate and ensnare their prey so they can feed on their sexual energy and occasionally their flesh. Young, virile men are supposed to be susceptible to their charms." Alan had made several attempts before the words managed to get past the lump in his throat.
"So I'm some kind of inhuman sex monster?"
He paused.
"Flesh?"
"Oh, no, you're human. Mostly. Innocence only attaches itself to human hosts, after all."
"Okay," Alan said. "Flesh?"
"Don't worry, you won't be eating anyone." Komui's face went through a series of contortions, turning faintly red, and he had to clear his throat before he continued. "According to reports, no one has had any problems with people who are part Vila exhibiting cannibalistic tendencies. It just manifests itself in a lot of compulsive, mind-blowing sex." Alan made a noise like a dying wheeze of a wounded animal. He could feel his face growing hot. "I'm having everyone wear masks over their nose. That should cut down on some of the effect you're having, pheromones and such. It won't stop completely, but it should help. Be warned, however, that this is going to get worse the longer it goes on, and it may end up negating any preventative measures we put into place. Beyond that, there's nothing more we can do, really. You could try to appear less attractive."
"Oh my god," Alan said. "I can't actually do that, can I?"
Komui's smile was strained.
"No. The accounts all agree that the only thing that will cut down on your magnetism is a steady supply of sex. From a single source or multiple ones, it doesn't really matter."
"But I haven't even managed to have sex with one person yet," Alan cried. Komui pressed the nib of his pen so hard against the paper on his desk that it snapped off. Alan flushed.
"I've been busy, you know, saving the world. I wanted it to be special, not just..."
"Oh my god." He buried his face in his hands.
"Completely understandable," Komui choked out.
His eyes, Alan noticed through his fingers, were glazing over. "We all do care about you, which is why it is important that you are informed about what is happening, and what it entails if you..." He swallowed.
If you would like to read more about the Vila, you are welcome to peruse the reference material I have for you from my lap. I think I'd rather just take it with me, Alan said faintly. He didn't look Komui in the eyes when he stood and grabbed the book off the desk. As he wobbled backward, Komui's eyes cleared marginally. If you touch my sister, you will be wearing your ribcage as a hat, Komui called after him, but the threat sounded shakier than usual. It was disconcerting to see everyone in the mess hall reach into their pockets and hook makeshift masks over their ears, and it didn't make Alan feel any less like they were all checking out his ass as he walked up to Jerry's window. He supposed it was better than all of them swarming him like the last couple of times, but not by much. Jerry popped up behind the counter, still looking sheepish. He had been one of the first 3 days ago, when he'd asked Alan to come to the back of the kitchens at breakfast because he had prepared Alan some special candy. By the time Chaoji had started making eyes at him, Alan figured everyone must have been suffering some kind of endemic brain disease. Alan said, looking over his shoulder, nervously. Could I get all of that to go? It wasn't like Alan didn't like people touching him. In fact, he very much enjoyed people touching him. But when people started trying to touch him in inappropriate places in front of God and the entire order while everyone looked on with the expressions of slavering lust, it became distressing. The fingers of the next person in line brushed against his butt. Thank you, Alan yelped, smiling apologetically at Jerry. He shouldered his bag of food and sprinted out of the room. Honestly, he had no idea what to make of this whole Vila thing. It was all a bit overwhelming. Right now, what he wanted to do most was to get to his room where he could sit down and read that book of Komui's Friends from Scotland, so he could find out how to make it stop. Surely there must be something someone missed, and he turned the corner and slammed right into Conda. Conda grabbed Alan's arm to keep from falling. A weird fissure of something skipped up Alan's spine. Conda, crap. Oh, sorry. You're back from your mission. Alan snapped his mouth shut and looked up at Conda in despair. You're not wearing a mask. Conda took a deep, slow breath through his nose, and his fingers tightened on Alan's arm, his eyes going dark with a hint of red appearing across his cheekbones. Alan clutched his bag of food. Then Conda scowled even harder. No one has any discipline anymore. He pushed Alan away and bent to retrieve the papers Alan had knocked from his hands. When he straightened up, he looked Alan straight in the eye and said, Komui told me what is happening. I do not need a mask because I am not and will never be attracted to you, you worthless idiot. Get out of my way. Oh, Alan said, when Conda turned the corner and disappeared again. He straightened up and frowned. It was a relief, he told himself firmly. One less person to worry about in this mess. Alan reached his room without further incident, but he couldn't focus on the book very well. Well, that was a lie. But after the section about the beaks and the claws and the rending of flesh, he didn't really feel up to reading any more tonight. And if the sex thing did turn out to be true, he would have no idea what to do. Maybe become a hermit on a mountain. Mountains were pleasant. Alan had always liked woodland creatures. But the thing was, he didn't want to become a hermit. Maybe it was selfish of him, but he loved the life he'd made for himself here. He wasn't ready to give it up. Alan stared at the book on his desk, then dropped his head down into his arms on top of it. His fingers twitched, restless, information churning around in his head. Komui couldn't be the only one who knew anything about this. Immediately, Alan thought of Cross and wondered why he hadn't thought of it before. Cross, he remembered, had been back at headquarters for about 2 weeks. It wasn't uncommon for him to be in residence and play truant regarding official business. But the fact that he hadn't propped up to make a disparaging comment about Alan's new state was strange. Alan supposed he should be grateful. Cross would probably tell him he was fucking up a great opportunity, as usual. On the other hand, Cross tended to be right about a lot of things, a lot of the time, and his plans, though unorthodox, had a high success rate. It couldn't hurt to ask him if he knew anything. Fortunately, for the sake of Alan's sanity, no one accosted him as he made his way to the general's quarters. This was more a result of him taking the back ways and ducking into janitorial closets whenever someone passed than anything else, but he would take his good luck where he could find it. Cross's door swung open on the first knock, and Alan peered inside with trepidation. Soft candlelight threw everything in the room into muted relief, rich red brocade glowing warm and inviting. Cross sat on the plush couch that faced the door, swirling the wine in his glass with one hand. Tim Campy fluttered around his head. When Cross caught sight of Alan, a sly grin spread across his face. "Hello, apprentice," he said, eyes doing a slow trawl of Alan's body. "I was wondering when you were going to show up to see me." Alan suddenly couldn't remember why he ever thought this would be a good idea. "Don't leave," Cross said frantically. He cleared his throat. When he continued, his voice was just as smooth and honeyed as it had always been. "I just want to offer some advice. I know what you're going through can be very difficult. Sit down, have a glass of wine." He patted the cushion next to him. Okay. Alan sat on the corner of the couch furthest away from Cross and folded his hands in his lap, declining the glass of wine that Cross offered. Cross put the bottle down and sat back again, this time much closer, and draped his arm around Alan's shoulders. Alan stiffened. "Alan, Alan," Cross said mournfully, "I know exactly how to handle this. I have this problem all the time."
"Really?" Alan asked.
"Oh, yes." Cross's other hand rested itself on Alan's thigh. "It's a burden, Alan, being so attractive to so many people. The real problem is that there just isn't enough time to love them all the way they deserve to be loved." Alan said, attempting to scoot away. Cross followed until he was pressing Alan back against the arm of the couch. "That isn't precisely the problem I'm having with it."
"That's because you're looking at this from the wrong perspective."
Alan could smell Cross's breath on his face, rank with wine. Cross lay heavy on top of him, and his hand attempted to slide up Alan's shirt.
Sir, why are you in my lap?"
"I don't know," Cross muttered. "Why am I in your lap?"
"Ah,"
Alan said, and slammed the heel of his palm into Cross's nose. He left Cross, who was holding his face and bleeding all over the couch, with a tissue and an apology. He felt bad about what he'd had to do, but he'd had no choice. Cross needed it. That option explored and exhausted, Alan found his steps lagging. It was discouraging, no doubt about it, but he was determined not to give up. If Cross couldn't give him answers, he would just have to find someone else who could. Inexplicably, he thought of Conda. Conda's clear, dark eyes in that moment, just before Conda let go of his arm. Alan sighed, then squared his shoulders. It was late already. He should go to bed. Maybe tomorrow they would have answers he hadn't thought of yet. Tomorrow turned out to be approximately 1 o'clock the next morning, when Alan woke up to the sound of his bedroom door being kicked in. Something launched itself onto his bed. His hands came up in automatic defense, and he froze when he touched naked, squishy skin.
"Alan,"
it moaned breathlessly. Alan's jaw dropped.
"Lena Lee?"
"Alan," Lena Lee moaned again. "Alan, I can't take it anymore." She grasped the collar of his nightshirt and ripped it apart. Buttons flew off, and one of them bounced off the wall, hitting Alan in the temple.
"You're such a nice boy. You're such a beautiful, nice boy, and I need you to fuck me until I scream."
That last bit was emphasized by a violent thrust of Lena Lee's hips against Alan's crotch, and Alan scrambled back.
"Lena Lee," he yelped.
Lena Lee appeared to have determined that ripping Alan's nightshirt apart was less conducive to her purposes than simply lifting it up. So she gripped the hem and squinted up at him through the moonlit darkness.
"Don't worry. I won't tell my brother."
The next phrase that came out of her mouth was said with baffled wonder.
"I want this even more than I want Cross."
Alan choked.
"Lena Lee!"
In a flurry of limbs, an attempted escape, Alan was able to determine that, yes, Lena Lee was really wearing nothing but her boots. He screwed his eyes shut with the despair of a man who knew there would never be enough bleach in the world. Eventually, he managed to free himself, despite the fact that it felt like Lena Lee had grown at least 4 extra grasping limbs. He managed to grab the comforter and a pillow off the bed after knocking her head into the wall, hard enough to incapacitate her, temporarily, he hoped. Lena Lee was a resilient woman. The problem, he realized, when he stumbled out into the hall, tugging his boots on, was that he had nowhere to go. Without a lock, his room had been compromised, and there was no guarantee that someone wouldn't find him wherever else he tried to hide, unless he hid somewhere no one would expect him to. A quick trip down the hallway brought him to Conda's door, which he eyed with no small amount of apprehension. But a clattering sound behind him reminded him that he needed to get out of sight before someone else came along. His knock was simultaneously as quiet and anxious as he could make it. Conda opened the door heavy-eyed and sleep-rumpled, and Alan's heart jumped in his chest. Then Conda tried to slam it shut, but Alan had already stuck his foot out in the gap.
"Go away," Conda mumbled.
"Please," Alan said. "Please, let me stay. Lennon Lee just kicked down my door, and there was naked and boots and breasts, and it was horrible, horrible, and no one will ever suspect that I'm hiding here."
Conda stopped trying to break Alan's foot in half at the door and peered at him. Heartened, Alan hooked a hand around it and continued. "I promise I won't be a bother. I just want to sleep somewhere in peace. Everyone else has gone crazy, and I don't know where to go. I'll even sleep in your bathtub, please."
Conda's cheeks were a dull red, anger or embarrassment. Alan couldn't tell which, but he sighed and let the door fall open.
"Get in here, you idiot. You can sleep on the floor."
"Thank you," Alan said fervently. For one brief, crazy moment, he wanted to do something suicidal like hug Conda. But fortunately for his bodily integrity, Conda soon had his customary scowl plastered across his features. He locked the door and climbed into his bed, back pointedly to Alan.
"If you touch me, I will kill you," he said, and went straight back to sleep.
Alan was not quite as lucky. Even cocooned in his comforter on the floor, his thoughts kept drifting back to Conda. He admired Conda for this, he thought. But then he admired Conda for a lot of things, even if they didn't see eye to eye most of the time. But admirable thoughts of Conda inevitably tangled up in his head, with memories of the sharp tones of Conda's voice cracking across the room, or the confident swipe of Conda's long fingers over his sword. A queer tightness in Alan's chest. It was all rather confusing, and he wasn't sure what it meant. He eventually managed to push Conda out of his mind, but it was still a long, restless hour before Alan fell asleep. Alan woke up with a shooting pain in his back and another one in his side, the former being a result of the cold floor and the latter from Conda's booted foot digging into the soft part of his body underneath his ribcage.
"Get up," Conda ordered. "I'm going out to train, and you are going to be gone by the time I get back."
Alan moaned. He heard Conda draw in a quick breath. "What time is it?"
4,
Conda said shortly. "Oh my God." Alan pulled the comforter higher over his head, uncomfortably aware that it exposed his lower legs to the icy stone floor. He shivered and made a pitiful sound. Conda hissed.
"Out,"
he said. And then the next thing Alan heard was the sound of the door slamming. He folded down the edge of the comforter. The room was empty. Well, not entirely empty. There was the furniture and a strange pink flower in a glass case on top of the table. It almost seemed to glow in the darkness. Looking at it too long made Alan's eyes water, so he turned his gaze away. It instead fell on the bed, which Alan eyed with longing. It looked, well, not soft, but certainly softer than the floor, and warmer, too. He knew he should be respecting Conda's wishes, but the thought of leaving the relative safety of this room filled him with dread. Conda, he knew, didn't usually finish his training until around 7, because that was the time Alan saw him walking into the mess for breakfast. And Alan was very tired. Giving the door Conda had left through one last nervous glance, Alan made a decision. 3 hours was a very long time, after all, more than long enough for a nap. Alan needed his strength, he told himself, especially if he was going to spend another whole day beating off people with sticks. And Conda did just say to be gone by the time he got back, not to leave right away. Stealing his resolve, Alan grasped the comforter and spread it out across the bed for extra warmth, climbing in between the sheets and sighing. This was much better than the floor. He nuzzled his face into Conda's pillow. Conda's scent, forest, and musk washed over him in soothing waves. It released the knot of tension in Alan's chest that he hadn't even been aware of until it was gone. All he wanted to do was wrap himself in it and stay like that forever. Thankfully, before he could start analyzing that compulsion too closely, and also the strange, content purring noises coming from the vicinity of his throat, he fell back asleep.
"Why the fuck didn't you—"
Conda's voice dragged Alan out of a dream about hair like black water sliding through his fingers. Conda made a frustrated noise.
"Whatever. At least I don't have to go looking for you. Get up.
Kumwe wants to see us about a mission. Alan said something that wasn't exactly English and woke up a bit more. Kanda? Who glowered down at Alan from his vantage point next to the bed. One head clenched at his side, the other resting on the handle of his sword. Alan scrubbed at his face and sat up, only belatedly remembering his nightshirt was falling apart, when it slid off the shoulder and Kanda's lips thinned. He pulled it back together, but not before Kanda had already cut his eyes away. "I don't have any of my clothes," Alan said, carefully, watching the sunlight spill in and reflect off Kanda's hair. For some reason, he felt like this moment was very delicate, that Kanda was brittle, rather. Kanda looked tired and washed out in the light, bones very prominent under thin skin. "I could break you like this," Alan thought, and drew the covers up around himself in shame. "I don't want to see you break like this," Alan thought next, and breathed in, trying to recapture that good feeling from just a few hours before. "I went to your room and got a few things," Kanda said. He glanced back at Alan. "All of your underwear was missing, though." Alan blanched. "Oh my God, people are depraved." Kanda snorted, and the tension in the room eased. Alan let his shoulders relax. "I left it on the chair for you," Kanda said. "I'll be waiting out in the hall."
"After some deliberation, I have decided that it is probably best if you left the order, for a while, Alan,"
Komui said, mopping his brow.
"Not permanently," he amended at the expression on Alan's face. "Just for a little while, for a mission. So we all have an opportunity to, gather our defenses, so to speak. Form a strategy. Since Kanda seems to be the one handling this situation the best, he will be accompanying you."
Alan looked at Kanda, who sat impassively on the couch.
"But that isn't fair. Kanda just got back from a mission and..."
"Shut up," Kanda said and grimaced. "I'm not going to let you determine what I can and cannot do."
"I was just trying to..."
"Gentlemen," Komui interrupted. "Alan, you need backup for this mission, and I can't in good faith let anyone else go. The information is in the envelope." He waved it at them and it flopped over. When Alan stood to take it, his fingers brushed against Komui's. And then Alan wheezed because Komui had hurled himself over the desk and slammed Alan into the couch, knocking the air from Alan's lungs. The pain in Alan's chest was almost enough to get his mind off the wet line Komui was licking over his jaw. Then, just as abruptly, Komui was gone. Blinking tears from his eyes, Alan saw him dangling by his lab coat from one of Kanda's hands. With his other, Kanda smacked Komui's handkerchief over his face. He looked from Komui to Alan, his expression pinched.
"Just go," Komui said, muffled and forlorn. "Please."
They didn't even get to take the finder with them. Not that Alan had any particular attachment in any of the finders, but it was nice to have another person to talk to, especially on missions with Kanda, who had stonewalling down to an art. Kanda hadn't said a single word since they got on the train, except for a curt death threat against the conductor lingering too long over inspecting Alan's baggage. Alan didn't count those, for Kanda's death threats were almost like breathing anyway. The landscape beyond the train windows must be fascinating, Alan thought, because Kanda hadn't taken his eyes off it since the conductor left. Alan had been trying to read Komui's book to fill the silence, but it hadn't been having much luck with that either. Reading and moving vehicles had always made him nauseous, and that wasn't even taking into account the subject matter, particularly after a distressing chapter about Vila weddings, woodland orgies, and ceremonial negligees. Alan was forced to set the book down. Unfortunately, it looked like Komui was right. Short of regular sex, nothing was going to dampen the pull he had on people. In fact, the longer he put it off, the worse it was going to get. The account of Velma the Voluptuous in the fourth chapter had detailed the unfortunate incident in which she had been stranded in the Sahara for 3 months, wandered into a small Egyptian village, and promptly been buried under a mass of writhing bodies. Alan sighed and tucked his feet up on the seat. It was really going to get worse before it got better, if it even did. He was more determined than ever not to give in, but he hadn't felt this helpless in a long time. The last thing he wanted to do was become a miniature cross, having meaningless sex all over the place. He wanted to have people like him for himself, not because of his freaky magical aphrodisiac powers. And the worst part was, now he would never know if they did. Rolling his head around, Alan studied Kanda's profile. Kanda didn't give any indication that he was aware of the scrutiny. Still and conspicuous as a giant boulder of "I am ignoring you," in the middle of their compartment. Alan frowned. "It's not like I asked for this to happen to me," he said. He didn't know why it was suddenly so important that Conda understand, but it was. "And I'm trying my best not to..."
"I know," Conda interrupted. "You do?"
Alan blinked. Conda snorted.
"I got it when you knocked down my door at 1 in the morning, screeching about the horror of Lenalee's..." Here he choked. "Lenalee's breasts."
"Oh." Alan waited for the silence to get oppressive again before continuing. He felt slightly better. "I guess it's not all that bad. I mean, I know things about people I never would have known before. Did you know Lavi is a poet?"
"No, he's not," said Conda.
Alan winced, recalling what had been written on the paper he found stuffed into the pockets of the pants Conda had bought him. "I think he's very sincere," he said loyally. Conda grunted.
"Miranda is also showing a side I never knew she had," Alan said after another pause.
"Did you know she wanted me to lick her boots and call her mistress?"
"You," said Conda.
Alan hid his smile behind his hand. Conda glared at him. "I think she and Crowley would make a nice couple." Conda lifted his eyes to the heavens and went back to ignoring Alan, but the lines around his mouth had softened and his posture relaxed. Alan went back to his book, but he was reading without processing the words again. Instead, he wondered idly what genuine amusement might look like on Conda's face.
"Wait," Alan said.
"Tiki Mick? We're going after Tiki Mick?" Conda, in the process of retrieving his suitcase from storage, looked at him. He'd already changed into his civilian clothes. It was odd to see him without his sword strapped to his side.
"Did you not read the mission briefing?"
Alan said, "No." He backpedaled hastily. "I didn't think this was going to be a real mission. I thought they were just trying to get me out of the tower." Conda took a breath, like he was gathering all his willpower not to strangle Alan.
"What makes you think I would ever agree to go on some bullshit assignment just to babysit you? We need to bring him in for questioning. Take off your coat, we don't want him to hear that the order is here. He's been managing to elude us for months, if you hadn't noticed."
Alan had. He just hadn't thought this was going to be what he would be doing. This was important.
"Now all we have to do is find him and bring him in," Conda continued, "and don't fuck up, and let him escape again."
The last part was clearly directed at Alan, but Alan was so thrilled to have positive proof that he wasn't just a nuisance, now that he couldn't bring himself to take exception to it. Then he had a terrifying thought. "They're not expecting me to, you know..." Conda looked at him askance.
"What the hell are you talking about?"
"Vila him? Except what I want to touch," echoed through Alan's memory. The ghost of gloved hands ran down his face, like the brush of butterfly wings. It was an effort not to shudder.
"No."
Alan's eyes widened at the word, or rather, Conda's tone, tight and furious. Conda looked murderous, eyes drawn together, and it took several moments before he schooled his features into something more neutral.
"Nobody will be touching you,"
he grated out finally. Abruptly, he turned on his heel and stalked out of the compartment. Alan stared after Conda's retreating back. After a second, he shook himself and picked up his own suitcase, trotting after, wondering what on earth that was about. The air was thin in the town where they were staying, and the mountain winds whistled through the eaves of the house. The inn's patrons stared at them suspiciously as Conda stepped up to ask for 2 rooms. Suspiciously at Conda, that is, and with dawning sexual interest at Alan. Alan said, tugging on his collar. "Are you sure that we can't share a room?" The innkeeper's wife raised her eyebrows and looked at Conda with renewed interest.
"What?"
Conda asked.
"Why would I want to do that?"
"It's just that I'd feel safer with you," Alan finished mentally. Was it just his imagination, or were the rest of the patrons slowly drifting closer? "Never mind. The only 2 singles I have left are small ones connected by an adjoining door," the innkeeper's wife said, Space is a little tight since we've coming up on the hot spring season. They've got easy access to each other, and by the way, I'm totally amenable to a man sandwich.
Me too, her daughter piped up, fumbling her tray of pint glasses.
Alan was pretty sure if Conda's face got any more pinched, it would implode.
We'll take them, Conda said, slamming the money on the counter and grabbing the keys. Lock your door, he ordered Alan quietly, but not quietly enough.
It doesn't matter, the innkeeper's wife called after them. I have the master key.
That's why, Alan mumbled forlornly on the way up the stairs. At the door, Conda turned to him, and his eyes fell to Alan's sleeve, which he'd been using to drag Alan along behind him. He dropped it like a hot potato, scowling.
Fine, he said. Just, we'll leave the door open, that way I can hear if there's any trouble.
Leaving the door open between the rooms turned out to be a fantastically bad idea. To Alan's dismay, the bed he woke up in the middle of the night was not the bed he went to sleep in, and the pillow he was clutching was not a pillow at all, but Conda's chest. One of Alan's legs straddled both of Conda's, and his nose was buried in Conda's neck. His hips, to his eternal humiliation, rubbed lazy circles against Conda's side. Conda lay stiff as a board underneath him, except for a minute tremble that Alan assumed must be pounding rage. If it wasn't, Alan didn't want to think about it. Alan couldn't pull away. He managed to still his hips, but he couldn't pull away. Conda smelled too good, just like his bed had, with dark, intoxicating overtones of something that recently awakened parts of Alan recognized as lust. He'd smelled it on everyone for the past few days, but not like this. Them he could ignore, but this he wanted, and wanted desperately. Conda? He whispered. Conda took a breath and brought one hand up to Alan's shoulder. Alan's heart soared, the voice in the back of his head that had been insisting, not because of this, suddenly easy to disregard. And then Conda shoved him off the bed. Alan gaped at the ceiling, trying to get the air back into his lungs. From his vantage point, he could see Conda's silhouette sitting up on the bed, head bent. Conda breathed quickly, loud in the silence of the room.
I am locking the adjoining door, Conda said finally, standing up and marching out.
Alan tested the door the next morning and found that it swung open at his touch. Conda was already gone. He couldn't help the splash of relief he felt and was immediately ashamed of it, sitting down quickly on the bed to tug his boots on. Stop being stupid, Alan told himself. It's not like this changes anything. Except it did, because Alan finally had a glimmer of understanding of what it was that Conda meant to him, had meant to him, coming at the worst possible time. He felt like an idiot. One would think that being a magical sex monster would give him an intuitive understanding of these things. But then again, maybe it didn't. Conda was infuriating at the best of times and downright intolerable at the worst, and in all likelihood it would never have happened anyway. Alan finished zipping up his boots, plastered on his brightest fake smile, and stood to find Conda. Conda sat at the bar doing what looked like his best to terrorize the piss out of the tiny squirrel-faced man next to him. He glanced up immediately when Alan walked in, just like almost everyone else in the room. Squirrel-face took an opportunity to escape out the door, imminent dismemberment apparently outweighing even Alan's attractiveness. Conda tore his gaze away from Alan to look back at the chair, grimacing when he realized it was empty. Alan sat down in it. I'm really sorry about last night.
Forget it, Conda said, his face twisted in an ugly sneer. It's not like you can help yourself.
Alan bristled, mouth open and ready to retort, but then he stopped. What did he care what Conda thought anyway? Conda would always be determined to think the worst of him no matter what. Alan frowned. Why were you talking to that guy?
Information, dipshit, Conda said.
They were back on familiar ground.
We still don't know exactly where Tiki Mick is holing up, and I was asking that little creep if he knew anything.
He shot a disgusted look at the innkeeper, a portly man in his 60s who was wiping down the bar at the far end, eyeing Alan with poorly concealed interest.
I would have asked him, but he broke into my room last night hoping I was you.
Oh, Fort, Alan said. He flagged down the innkeeper. And I suppose you thought that intimidating them into speechlessness was going to work. he hissed at Conda, then smiled at the innkeeper before Conda could say anything. It was one thing Alan had learned from the years of traveling with Cross Marion. It was that some things loosened lips much better than others. One of those things, of course, is money, and the other is sex. While the mission budget allowed for the plenty of the former, Alan had the latter in spades now, and there was really nothing that was stopping him from using it.
Good morning, sir,
the innkeeper stammered.
How can I service you? Serve you?
Alan winced mentally, but widened his smile and crossed his legs. The innkeeper looked ready to faint. I was hoping you could tell me something.
Anything, the innkeeper said fervently. Did you know I'm actually an exiled prince from the beautiful kingdom over the sea?
My, how romantic, Alan murmured. The innkeeper turned beet red. But actually, I was hoping you'd be able to help me locate a friend of mine. He used to go by the name Tiki Mick. He's tall, foreign, with curly black hair and a mole under his right eye, here. Alan pointed. The innkeeper flated, dejected.
I'm not...
Please. Alan put a hand on one of the innkeeper's wide ones. It's very important to my happiness. The innkeeper looked at his hand, trembling. Alan brushed his fingers over the top of that.
He works in the hot springs, the innkeeper blurted. But not until the evening shift.
Thank you. Alan shot a triumphant look at Conda, but Conda only glared. Alan resisted glaring back and turned back to the innkeeper instead, smile still firmly on. In the meantime, I'll have the scrambled eggs, if it's not too much trouble.
Of course not, sir.
The innkeeper scurried away, unsteady on his feet. Alan's shoulders slumped and he pressed the heel of his hand against his temple.
What?
He asked Conda defensively, but Conda just blew air through his nose and turned back to his own breakfast. The trip to the building that houses the hot springs was a long one, Conda trudging silently up the mountain in front of Alan. The closer they got, the more distinctly it smelled of sulfur, delicate in the air but not exactly unpleasant. Alan's stomach contorted anyway.
We'll split up, Conda said when they reached it. There's not so much ground to cover, and there's no point in alerting anyone else here that we're looking for him unless we have to.
Okay, Alan said.
And if you find him first, call me.
Conda pointed to the communicator on Alan's ear.
Don't be an idiot and try to capture him by yourself.
Okay, Alan said crossly. He raised his eyebrows in challenge.
I'll take the east side, Conda said.
The building was deserted except for a few early guests shuffling around. Alan stayed out of sight as best he could. Thankfully, most of the doors were open, so it was easy to see inside. Unfortunately, none of the people Alan saw bore even passing resemblance to Tiki Mick. By the 13th door and the 13th massive blonde man, Alan was considering whether he should have called Conda and ask if he found anything, or do that later and ask. He looked at the nameplate on the door. Sven, for a massage, now. His mouth twisted in an unhappy line. Only a few more doors lined the hall, all of them closed. Two turned out to be storage closets, one was a bathroom. But the last one had another peeling nameplate, unreadable, and Alan eased it open. Crap, he breathed, because there was Tiki Mick. Tiki stood with his back to Alan, bent over the table at the far end of the room, wiping it down and humming something tuneless to himself. Alan backed out into the hall and pressed the button on the back of his communicator.
Where are you? Conda asked.
Alan told him, and Conda made an affirmative noise, cutting the connection. Alan peered back inside the room, and tensed when he heard the murmur of voices behind him. He had a dilemma. If he stayed outside in the hall, he was almost bound to get caught loitering before Conda could get to him. But if he went and hid inside... Well, technically he wasn't doing anything wrong, because he wasn't trying to capture Tiki Mick. He was just keeping an eye on him. Alan slipped inside and behind a tall cabinet. He was only inside for maybe half a minute before Tiki turned around, sniffing the air. "Who's there?" Tiki called. He sniffed again and started listing in Alan's direction, face flushed. Alan's stomach dropped. He was an idiot. Nothing for it, then. "Hi, Tiki," he said, stepping out. Tiki's head snapped around. Alan Walker, he said. How nice to see you. You've certainly grown since we last met.
Yes, Alan said. Tiki stepped toward him, crowding him against the wall. His eyes swept over Alan's body, lingering at Alan's collar, where Alan realized belatedly he'd left the top buttons of his shirt undone. Tiki's tongue flicked out over his lips, but then he frowned.
What are you doing here?
Alan seized on an idea. I came to see you.
Really?
Tiki looked thrilled. Alan tried to keep his dinner down. Yes, I can't stop thinking about how you touched me. Oh, Tiki, he added for good measure. The smile that spread across Tiki's face was wide and unsettling. Alan smiled back, stiffly. Oh, Alan, Tiki murmured, lifting an elegant hand to tuck a wayward strand of hair behind Alan's ear. I've been thinking about you, too. You can't be blamed. It must have been quite the experience. He sighed tragically, waving at the assorted jars of massage oil spread around the room. Of course, it's not the same now, but I do what I can. Oh, Tiki, Alan said again for lack of anything better to say. Alan, sweetness, look at you, you're shaking. How about we move back to the table and I'll see if I can work some of that tension from your shoulders? Alan said. Tiki pressed up against him, stroking one hand down the side of Alan's face. This time Alan couldn't suppress his shudder, a spark of fear flaring up in his guts. There's no need to be nervous, love. I just want to touch you. You want it too, don't you? My hands all over your beautiful skin, inside. Tiki froze. Alan?
You will keep your unnatural perversions to yourself, Conda said.
A thin line of red trickled down Tiki's neck, where Conda's wakizashi made an indentation in the skin. Alan's fear drained out of him all at once, leaving him surprisingly weak in the knees. Asshole. Conda did something to the back of Tiki's neck that made Tiki's eyes roll up and Tiki slump forward unconscious against Alan. Conda yanked him upright and slammed him against the wall, holding him there for a second before pulling back and clocking him across the jaw.
Insurance, he told Alan tightly.
Conda, Alan said.
I don't want to hear it, Conda shouted. Jesus fucking Christ!
Words seemed to have failed Alan anyway, so he could only watch uselessly as Conda pulled rope out and started tying Tiki's hands. Shoving a semi-conscious, trussed-up Tiki Mick through the bar on the bottom floor of the inn caused less of a sensation than Alan would have expected, but he couldn't help lingering after Conda disappeared upstairs to try and explain. It's kind of...
Oh, don't worry, dear, the innkeeper's wife said.
She smacked her ladle across her palm and gazed mistily at her husband. He blushed.
We understand.
Alan said. Right. He made his escape. By the time he got to their rooms, Conda was dropping a once again fully unconscious Tiki Mick on his bed. He pointed to the adjoining door without turning his head.
Get in there.
Why? Alan started, bewildered.
Just go,
Conda snarled. When Alan hesitated a second too long, he grabbed Alan's arm and yanked him through, whirling around and slamming Alan against the wall after kicking the door shut behind them.
What? What the fuck were you thinking?
Conda yelled, fist tangled in the front of Alan's shirt.
I told you! You can't just walk up to Tiki fucking Mick like that!
I did...
Or have you forgotten what he is?
He's only human now.
The finders they sent out looking for him first died. Do you know why?
Conda held up two unfamiliar, wicked sharp knives in his other hand.
Because he slit their fucking throats. He wouldn't have hurt me,
Alan shouted, squashing down his own doubts about the validity of that statement.
I don't know why you're so angry about this.
The silence that followed startled in its completeness.
nothing but the empty whistle of the air for the space of 1, 2, 3 heartbeats. Then Conda hauled off and punched Alan in the face. Alan reeled, legs shooting out instinctively. Conda went down with a thump, bringing Alan with him by virtue of his hand clutched in Alan's shirt. They grappled briefly, Alan landing a couple of punches to Conda's gut before Conda flipped them both over, cracking Alan's head against the ground and landing on top of him. Alan wrapped his legs around Conda's body, hands flying up to yank at Conda's hair. Conda hissed. Conda was hard, Alan realized hazily. He could feel it where Conda was pressed up against him. His heart stuttered and started pounding again, even harder. Conda shifted against him, and his face dropped into Alan's neck.
"Because I hate you,"
Conda whispered, breath gusting out hot against Alan's skin. Alan shivered, fingers twitching against Conda's scalp.
"I hate you,"
Conda repeated. His nose slid along the line of Alan's throat.
"I hate you when I've always hated you, you stupid, irresponsible, unrealistic child. You've no fucking perspective, and you always go fucking things up for me, and it just fuck."
He laughed, another gust of air, no amusement. "And the worst fucking part?" Alan drew in a breath.
"And the worst fucking part is that your stupid thing didn't even change anything. Because it's always been this way."
Always, Alan thought, as Conda's lips stopped feathering along his jaw, as Conda's body stilled and his breath went shallow and even. He let his legs relax, cradling Conda against him instead of holding him immobile, sweeping his fingers through Conda's hair, as Conda's arms curled in around his head. Always, he thought, remembering the past few days, the odd behavior, the inexplicable possessiveness, all the way back through the first 2 years and Conda's first lie, "I will not protect you." Standing above Alan in a forgotten Italian village, blood seeping into his bandages,
"I don't think you hate me," Alan said, throat tight.
"Conda." Conda's head snapped up, and his eyes locked on Alan's, flashing. Alan offered him a crooked smile before closing his own and leaning forward to kiss him. For a long moment nothing happened, and then Conda made a low sound, hand cupping the back of Alan's head, mashing their mouths together clumsily. Their teeth knocked together, and Alan woofed with surprise.
"Wait," Alan mumbled, tugging Conda's hair to get his attention.
Conda retreated maybe a millimeter, slow and soft. Alan let his tongue slide across Conda's lips before slipping inside and licking the roof of Conda's mouth. Conda hesitated, then did nearly the same thing, scraping his teeth over Alan's bottom lip, making Alan's belly tighten with anticipation and a cautious elation.
"Okay," Alan said. "That's good."
Then Alan flipped them both over and sat down on Conda's cock, which got an answering groan from Conda that was really more like a grunt. Conda's hands clutched Alan's thighs when Alan rolled his hips.
"The hell?"
Conda managed before Alan leaned down and licked into his mouth. Their tongues brushed slickly against each other while Alan fumbled with the buttons on Conda's shirt.
"Okay," Alan said when he sat up.
Palms splayed against the smooth skin of Conda's chest. He pushed Conda's shirt apart and fell silent, mouth dry, fingers tracing in and up over the faded ink of Conda's tattoo. Conda's muscles twitched under his scrutiny. Conda was beautiful, Alan thought, pale and warm, dark eyes and dark, dark hair, the proud twist of his mouth and the strength of his convictions. Alan didn't know how no one else saw it. How they all saw him instead, with his funny hair and funny scar and funny arm, uncertain and inadequate. Something of it must have shown in Alan's face because Conda's changed, hard and determined where he'd been lax with surprise and desire. Conda pushed up on his elbows and hands and kissed Alan, their noses bumping together as Alan settled back across Conda's thighs. When they sorted themselves out, Alan's arms had wound around Conda's neck, and Conda's hands had wormed up underneath Alan's shirt. Ungentle, Conda's blunt fingernails scraping over Alan's back.
"Conda," Alan said.
Conda inhaled.
"On the bed,"
he said, frowning. I'm not going to... with you on the floor. Oh, Alan said, okay. Alan let his arms fall and stood up, trying not to feel self-conscious, but not really succeeding. For lack of anything else to occupy his hands with, he started picking off his clothes, climbing against the headboard when he was done, arms around his knees. Fortunately, that galvanized Conda into action, and he shrugged off the rest of his own clothes and climbed in behind Alan, putting one hand on Alan's arm. Alan obligingly unfolded himself and let Conda run a hand down his side. Conda's gaze followed the path his palm traced. Shivering, Alan made a plaintive noise, and Conda's eyes shot back to his face. Would you... Alan swallowed. Would you fuck me, please? Conda's hips jerked against Alan's leg. He opened and closed his mouth a few times like he wanted to say something, but finally settled on glaring silently. Like, this... Alan said, leaning over the side of the bed and digging around for the lotion he kept in his bag for his hand. When he found it, he drew up his knees and rearranged them both so they were in an approximation of the position they were in on the floor. Alan took a second to luxuriate in the sensation of naked skin on naked skin and the pressure of Conda's lips against his own before lifting his head. You need the lotion. At Conda's blank look, he added, for your fingers.
How was I supposed to know that?
Conda demanded, snatching the little jar from Alan's hand. He spread a dollop over his hand and frowned at Alan expectantly. You've never, Alan started, then blushed again, remembering the night spent alone in his room at the Order, with one hand wrapped around his cock and fingers of the other hot and slick up his ass, fucking himself on his fingers and thinking of no one. Just the smell of the forest and ozone.
I've been busy, Conda said, looking mutinous.
Alan's gaze dropped to the faded tattoo on Conda's chest, and he smiled.
I know. Me too.
Conda harrumphed and looked uncertain again. Here, just... Alan took Conda's hand in his own and guided it between his legs, until one of Conda's fingers pressed against the ring of muscle there. Just... one at a time, okay? Conda watched Alan's face carefully, and Alan wanted to reassure him but couldn't find the words. They all abandoned him the moment Conda pushed his finger in. Alan's body opened easily, hungry for the feeling of Conda's fingers stroking inside. He moaned, sparks of sensation shivering up his spine. Conda's breathing sped up.
Are you... Yes, Alan said. Yes, yes, please, Conda.
He curled up to kiss Conda as the second finger went in, and was still kissing him when the third one did, desperate and open-mouthed. Alan panted in earnest now, pushing down against Conda's hand. He couldn't wait anymore. Conda, he said, tugging on Conda's hair. Come on, Conda, please. Conda let out a breath through his teeth and moved over, replacing his fingers with his cock. He stopped once he was all the way in, arms trembling, eyes screwed shut. Alan's legs trembled too, his face was less than an inch away from Conda's, their foreheads pressed together. He could feel Conda's ragged breath over his lips. He dug a heel into Conda's back. How long? Alan demanded. Conda groaned brokenly, pulling back and surging forward again. Alan tightened his grip in Conda's hair.
How long? Always.
Conda gasped on his next thrust, and finally started moving.
Always,
he said again, and Alan could feel all of it. Conda's hand on him, the thundering of Conda's pulse, the tightness of Conda's muscles, Conda's cock inside him, finally, a dizzy rhythm that left Alan wordless and whimpering and complete. Alan woke up in stages. First, the sensation of warmth, solid pressure against his chest and the whisper of something against his ear. He snuffled and curled in. It tickled.
Alan, Conda said.
Alan stiffened. Conda, he said carefully. He twisted around to get a better look. Conda's eyes reflected black in the moonlight, half-lidded, his features pale and indistinct. Conda sighed. As Alan held his breath, Conda leaned down and touched his lips against the corner of Alan's. Instinctively, Alan opened his mouth into the kiss, all the tension bleeding out of him.
"You need to get up now," Conda said, voice hoarse when he managed to pull away.
"Okay," Alan said, curling his tongue around the pulse line on Conda's neck, tasting sweat and sleep.
"Wait, what?" "We leave today."
"It's still dark."
"Early train," Conda said.
Alan shifted back and studied Conda's face again.
"Are we going to talk about this?" he asked.
"No," Conda said, coloring.
"Shut up."
Before Alan could say anything else, he rolled out of bed. They were both dressed. They opened the door to the other room. Tiki fell to the ground at their feet, waking up with a snort. His pants were undone, an interesting development considering that his hands were still tied.
"That's something I never need to see again," Conda said evenly.
Tiki's teeth flashed white in the darkness.
"Have fun?" he asked.
Conda shifted like he was going to kick Tiki in the face.
"Wait," Alan said. "Are you feeling the uncontrollable urge to molest me?"
Tiki sat up and took a long breath through his nose.
"No," he said. "That doesn't mean I still don't want to," he added hastily, leering.
Conda snarled.
"It's okay," Alan said. "It's okay." And it was, especially after they'd gotten Tiki stored safely under their seats with the rest of the luggage.
Conda seemed preoccupied with beating his forehead into a giant bruise against the glass of the window, but he didn't pull away when Alan slid their fingers together, either. Outside, the sun peeked over the horizon. The end. If you've enjoyed this story, please leave feedback to the author. You can do that at a link to the text through this story's post. Thanks for listening.